This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everybody, it's Gary Vaynerchuk, and I have a really special guest here, an entrepreneur that I've known for a very long time, and I got an email. I get a lot of emails. I got an email either from him or his crew, and they're like, Chip's got some stuff to talk about. I'm like, yes. So here we are.
Thank you.
On MLK Day, we're filming and recording this. Chip Conley's in the building. Chip, why don't you tell everybody who's listening a little bit about yourself, and then very frankly, some of the things that you want to talk about, and then we'll riff.
Yeah, so great to be here.
Thanks,
congratulations on the digs here.
Thanks.
Pretty nice.
Thank you.
Staying at the Equinox Hotel right nearby,
which is very, very nice.
Getting a massage tonight. So yeah, I started the second largest boutique hotel company in the U.S. when I was 26, called Joie de Vivre, based in San Francisco. All 52 of the hotels were all in California. Sold it. And then 7 years.
How did the first one start? Because I know this audience, when they hear that hyperbole, everyone's like, how?
Yeah, so
how
the first, one started? I was 2 years out of Stanford Business School. In fact, I was hanging out with my friend Seth Godin yesterday here in New York, who I went to business school with. So I started the first one by buying a pay-by-the-hour motel. Not because I was frequenting it.
But which would have been fun.
Because it was cheap. And
how'd you have any capital?
I raised about $1.1 million. So I was 26. I had gone to Stanford Business School, gone to Stanford undergrad, had a lot of friends who had money.
Had money.
I was not from a money family.
Yep. What year was this?
It was 1986, 86, 87.
So give me, you know what's funny? That's a little bit, like
before
enough before my time that I don't have a good enough read on how ridiculously hard or ridiculously easy, even going to Stanford, you know, when I hear 86, 87 and I hear 1.1.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, that's a real accomplishment. You know, now kids,
I don't know.
Well, I'll say this, listen, raising capital is its own game in itself, but you know, today, you don't have to be that remarkable to actually be able to raise $1 million for a startup idea because of what's happened the last decade.
That's true.
Paint this for me. In 1986, 87, in the Stanford world, like, was that incredibly difficult? Was that two families that had so much money that it, like, well, give me a little context to make it practical.
It was about 20 investors all putting about 50K each in. So it was like a syndication. That's what we used to call it.
Did people think it was crazy to give a 26-year-old?
Because I was 26 and had no hotel experience.
Again, now the 22-year-old getting $1 million seems common. Then it seems to me like an enigma.
It was wacky, and it was a...
Or was things happening because it was Stanford San Francisco?
San Francisco was not what it is today then. Long story short is, it would be, people were betting on me, not on the business plan, and not on the real estate, because it was a broken down motel in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. So, I raised the money. It took me 3.5 years to sort of get it to a place where it was clearly a success story. It became the rock and roll hotel in San Francisco. So everybody from David Bowie to Linda Ronstadt were staying there as this funky motel. And
how'd you get the first get?
The first get?
Yeah, like the first person that was
a great
cool
story.
That you got, because that became the domino to
in terms
it.
Of the investors?
No.
In terms of the guests?
Guests.
It was all about the tour manager. Everybody thought it was all about going out and marketing to the travel agents. No, it was actually the person who made the decision was the guy who's about 5 years older than the rest of the band, who wanted to make sure they didn't do an overdose or the groupie wouldn't like hijack them.
Yes.
And so we gave that, we did a deal where we said, we have a massage treatment room. You can get a free massage if you bring us 10 room nights. And so the tour managers started talking to each other. And next thing I knew, all the tour managers and the bus drivers liked us because we had free bus parking too. So at the end of the day, you got to determine, like, what do you have that's your benefit? And we had a massage studio and a parking lot.
Uh-huh.
And the tour manager bought it. And next thing I knew, we basically for 33 years now, that hotel, it's called the Phoenix Funky Motel in the Tenderloin. And then, you know, Create 52.
And were you there every day?
I was there every day in the early days. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. I mean, I was learning the business. I didn't know anything about it.
Of course.
I didn't go to Cornell Hotel School or anything like that. So
why'd you want to do it?
First of all, I had a lot of people staying on my couch. So, you know, a little market research was like, why are you all staying in my couch? Why don't you stay in a hotel? And they kept saying the hotels in San Francisco are either really expensive or really boring.
Who are these people?
Friends who are coming to visit San Francisco. So
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in LA, grew up in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. I went to Snoop Dogg's high school. So I'm LBC, famous.
I love it.
Long Beach Poly High School, number one high school for...
Might have been a slightly different high school when you and Snoop were there,
no,
or same?
No, I mean, so Snoop's about 10 years younger than me, but he's stayed in my hotels, which you need to know after Snoop stays in your hotel room, you definitely need to fumigate a little bit, just because there's a little stench of the weed.
Makes sense.
So, when I was back there, they called me Curious White Boy. I played basketball, like you. Nice. You and I, so last time I think I saw Gary was, we were at Summit at Sea, up on a top deck, playing
basketball.
Full court basketball,
so
while
fun.
He was in his sandals. I'm surprised you didn't break a leg.
I'm super happy.
But I had that company for 24 years, sold
That's
it.
Awesome.
It's now a Hyatt brand. And long story short is, I, 7 years ago, was asked by the three founders of Airbnb to come help them grow their company into a global hospitality brand. So I've spent 7 years as Brian Chesky's mentor, and I was the head of global hospitality and strategy for the company for 4 years full time, and then for the last 3 years just been like a strategic advisor to them.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that the thing that, and part of the reason I'm here is because while I was there, you know, they called me a curious white boy when I was in high school. They called me the modern elder at Airbnb, and mm-hmm. I did not like that. Mm-hmm. But I was twice the age of the average employee at Airbnb. Mm-hmm. I started when I was 52. I'm 59 now.
For everybody who's listening, my great run in kind of the Silicon Valley investment world definitely was kind of like 05 to like 06 to like 2010. And what's interesting about hearing this story is that Chip absolutely like was in those circles with me. And it was just like there was a bunch, there was probably like 40 to 150 people that weren't hardcore tech, had come from different diverse backgrounds, but were kind of like in the mix one way or the other. And so it's really fun to hear that that's where you ended up, and how it makes so much fucking sense, because the value prop on context and reps that you were able to bring that exact company is like the most logical shit I've ever heard.
Well, it was so funny because when I joined, first of all, for the first 5 months, we didn't tell anybody I joined. So we didn't tell the press. We wanted to see how Brian and I got along, because
where
I was...
Where did you meet Brian originally?
Brian just called me. He just called me out of the blue.
You're in the mix.
He said, you know, one of the things I will say about Brian, you know, a lot of people think it's the hubris that makes you a great CEO. It's actually the humility.
100%.
And in Brian's case, he's had the humility to say, I don't know a bunch of stuff, so I'm going to go out and when it comes to hospitality, I'm going to go talk to this guy who's in San Francisco, who's created a boutique hotel company. He's an entrepreneur.
Who's in the mix with our community.
He's in the mix.
Which really mattered at the time.
That's true.
And it always does, but I remember it very vividly.
Oh my God. All the people who looked at me like, what the hell are you doing? When it finally was announced 5 months later, it's like, why would you...
that was your old
my
world.
Brethren in the hotel
yeah.
world had no they had
they
no
had
clue
concept.
What Airbnb was.
Yeah, it was
and
the most
so,
anyway.
Long story short is it's been it led me to becoming this modern elder. And what the hell's a modern elder? So the traditional elder of the past was all about reverence. You revered your elders. But a modern elder is about relevance. And so you better be as curious as you are wise. So at age 52, I was joining a tech company for the first time. I didn't understand the lingo, but I had to learn. And so what I had to do was be humble. I had to be open to like saying, I don't know what you fucking mean by saying you're going to ship a feature. Explain that to me. And so I was the person who could come in and make the bridges and create the bridges to the travel industry. And I was Brian's mentor and helping him to look at leadership from a CEO's perspective. But the problem in our society today, and I think you've talked a little bit about this in the past, is we're going to live longer. Power is moving younger and the world is changing faster. And there's a collection of people in midlife who feel irrelevant and bewildered.
And have a ton to give.
They do.
But to your point, and I'm sure my team smiled because it's a word I talk a lot about, it's going to take humility on both fronts.
For sure. There are a lot of people who are 45 to 60 years old who just are complaining about millennials, and they're not actually asking how they are getting back in the mix by becoming a beginner again.
And aren't being held accountable for parenting and creating the millennials. It's my favorite dynamic right
now.
That
too.
Literally, I go to these dinners or whatever, and like they're shitting on it, and I'm like, you're the parent. You're the one that created this entitlement, you know, because everybody had to have a fucking trophy.
Here's the thing I've learned, you know, I had something to teach Brian had something to teach me.
1,000%.
And I had 100 mentors over my 7 years now at Airbnb, and each one of those 100 mentees, I'm sure I had 100 mentors. Well, interesting I said that. I had said I had 100 mentors. Well, I did. Mm-hmm. I was going to say 100 mentees, but mutual mentorship is the future of learning and development in companies.
I am such a fucking buyer of what you're putting down right now.
Yeah.
I think we're about to go through the golden era. We're going through it at Vayner.
Yeah.
I hired a new chief creative officer, and I told him one of the things I want to do in 2020 is hire retired copywriters, literally from the Mad Men era.
Yeah.
There's so much to bring to the table. Yeah. Nobody looks at them as a viable option. I like literally can't wait to hire them. A lot of them are so financially sound on the East Coast here anyway, like they'll be thrilled to work for minimum wage, let alone something more than that. Yeah. And it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And the kids are gonna learn.
After the tech industry, I think the advertising industry probably has the highest level of ageism out there. Because
I think that's right. I'm such a foreigner to it. And now that I'm in it, I'm like, I don't understand how you're not as creative at 52 as you were at 39. It's silly.
It's so there's a lot of opportunity here. And that's led to is I wrote this book called Wisdom.
Well, it's funny. I apologize. We talked about football before I went on. I think a lot about coaching.
Yep.
Look at the two coaches that are going to be in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
One's a vet coach. Yeah.
And one's a
young coach. Yeah. Well, Andy's been to the Super Bowl,
He's never won.
No, and hopefully it's not finally for you because you're a Niners fan and you don't want him to win this one. But then you have Shanahan, who's a young buck, right?
Yeah.
And in the NFL, you've seen that. You've seen it go with Carroll and Belichick and Reed over here, who are the older guard.
Yeah.
And then you've got this whole McVay, Shanahan, young guard.
Yeah.
And I really actually believe there's a lot there.
Yeah.
I actually think, you know, in politics, I think a lot about the founding fathers of how young they are and how old a lot of our politicians are. And I think that's great. But I think you need the mix of two and the friction. And I think I'm very much buying what you're putting down. And I think knowing you enough from the outside world and the serendipitous ways we've run into each other, I'm excited that you are clearly thinking about being one of the champions of this conversation, because I think it's a good one.
Well, it's why I wrote this book.
It's also going to bring a lot of happiness.
You're about
to help a ton of 45 to 72 year olds.
You know what's interesting is you're 44.
Four.
Okay, a couple thoughts on 44. 44, frankly, you're right there. Your life has been different than the average person. But you know, the lowest point of happiness in across cultures is about age 47.
Interesting.
So what happens is this U-curve of happiness. People are happy and they get less happy.
James, how old are you?
52.
Understood. And you were shaking your head on that 47.
We worked on some data for a happiness curve.
And you found it to be in that range? Interesting.
Yeah, so it's fascinating.
Keep going.
So long story short is...
Can't wait! 3 years away.
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
I'll be okay.
Listen, how long are you going to live, first of all?
I think 111 for me.
111, wow. I would do some math. So if you live to 111, you're probably not even out into the second quarter of your adult life yet.
You're preaching.
People
I'm not even sure I left the dugout yet.
So when I recently was hanging out with my dad scuba diving in Indonesia, and
cash.
And we were, I went on one of those online sites, threw my data in there, and they said I was going to live till 98.
That's cool.
And I did the math, and this was 2 years ago. This is a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And I was 57 at the time. And the truth is, if I do live till 98, at age 57, I was not even at halftime of my adult life starting at age 18.
Understood.
So you're probably, if you live to 111, you might be going into the second quarter.
Listen, my relationship with time and the ability to be hyper but have a great patience graph is something that I beat the drum of very heavily, because it will help people, because so many people are anxious because they think they have to figure it out at 30.
Well, they see these people like Brian Chesky and
but there's seven of them.
Yeah, exactly. So
I keep reminding them.
Well,
there's fucking 42 of these.
This
people.
This is why a lot of people feel entitled, or they feel the sense of prior of like, if he can do it, I can do it. So I wrote a book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder, based upon my Airbnb experience.
When did it come out?
Came out last year. Came out the end of last year. So end of 2018. Yes.
And do you feel that might, you know, it's funny. I really want to ask you this question. Came out in 2018, late 2018.
Yeah.
Are you excited because if you're analyzing that conversation, you were a hair early, like in the macro, and that it's starting to build momentum? Just curious on your own personal take.
Yes, the answer is it probably came out about 6 months before the thing started to hit.
And I would argue, and tell me what you think, because it's a conversation I'm passionate about, it's still wildly not being talked about.
No. Ageism, or even just the subject of age diversity. It's been proven that actually age is the number one form of diversity on teams. So better than race diversity. I mean, we need all kinds of diversity. Let's start with that. But age is a more effective form of diversity than race, gender, sexual orientation, etc. For a lot of reasons. Primarily because our brain is different as we're older versus younger. So that led me to creating something called the Modern Elder Academy. So it's the world's first midlife wisdom school. It's been open now for 2 years. It's in Baja, so I get to live an hour north of Cabo San Lucas on the Pacific coast.
So it's a great wine there.
It's amazing. Great wine in Baja, yeah, the northern, the side, northern Baja, the Bahia de Guadalupe. Yep. Yes, exactly, the Guadalupe Valley. So yeah, so we've had 750 alums. Average age 53 from 22 countries.
Are you teaching?
I'm teaching. I just taught last week with a guy named Paul Hawken, famous environmentalist, author, and entrepreneur. And yeah, so it's
good
amazing.
For you.
So it's a social enterprise too. So we give scholarships as well. So I give about $1.5 million.
How much does it cost?
It's like if for a single, it's $5,500 for a week. Double occupancy is $4,000 for a week. But that's all inclusive. That includes everything, including a massage. Massage is the theme here, you know?
Do some people look at it as, hey, I can understand it. Very interesting. How much is it again?
So it's $4,000 to $5,500. But there's scholarships.
For a week?
For a whole week, three meals a day, full on gourmet staff, kitchen staff.
The number Do you feel like some people who can afford it, or even if they can't afford it, but scholarship, see it as a mix between advancement and vacation?
It's both.
Yeah, so it makes like sense. You think about where travel. It is. Like, you know what? Why I'm stopping? And again, I think you guys saw in the setup, like literally, if you know anything about me, like the email, I saw Chip's name and I said yes. So I literally had no idea what the fuck we were talking about.
Thank you.
I'm so oblivious to everything. Like, I didn't even realize how long you were at Airbnb and things of that nature. But this is so hitting me so perfectly. I want to stick here for a minute.
Yeah.
I think it's really clever because I think what I really like about it is like, I don't like vacations.
Yeah.
Like, let me phrase, I like vacations.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to scuba dive or like rock climb, but this thing you just said, I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. And I'm pumped.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a great place and not looking for like, oh fuck, I don't know. Like, I'm in a great place and I'm like, maybe I should, I'm gonna trick Chip into letting me teach, so I'll just
come,
take it. Like,
I you listen, know, like, come co-lead with
well,
me
that
for
was my
a
trick.
Week.
So there we go. We'll talk we about it. Honestly, I'm super fascinated by this.
Yep.
More importantly, I've like not exhausted, but I've done a very good job for my own self, judging my own self over the last 36 months to really pounding a certain conversation to a certain demo. I'm wildly excited about 55 to 90.
Yeah.
Like, I really am.
This
I really
is your
wish...
modern elder period.
No,
truly.
No, I like it. Forget about me.
Yeah.
I want fuckers to realize they're 52 and they're gonna live for another 38 years
yes.
minimally. And like, what the fuck are you wrapping it up?
Yep, exactly.
The fuck are we talking about?
No, it's crazy.
And it's so, crazy. So all the rules, Chip, are predicated on when people live to 40. Yeah. All the rules.
Yeah. Well, so the at age 47 was the longevity in the year 1900, and it was 77 by the year 2000. So we added 30 years of longevity in one century. But we also introduced a whole new concept, which is the midlife crisis in 1965. And now it is 55 years later, and we've done very little to address the midlife crisis, so to speak. And so my premise, and you know, midlife suicide are up 50% compared to the year 2000. So long story short is, I said I wanted to create the world's first midlife wisdom school because the premise, there's a new word in the academic world called midlescence. So adolescence, we know what an adolescent is,
yep.
But that word is only 115 years old. So that prior to the word adolescence being in the lexicon 115 years ago, people at age 13 when they hit puberty were an adult. And you got married and you had kids and you worked in the mines,
yep.
Et cetera. And then adolescence became a clear new sort of life stage.
I
and
like
so
where you're going with
the,
this.
The life stage between
it.
Childhood and adulthood. So we have midlescence. It's the stage between adulthood and elderhood. Elderhood is different than elderly. Elderhood is a relative term. At Airbnb, I learned the hard way. I was a modern elder because I was twice the age of the average employee there. So I owned the word. And I had to say, okay, but it's a modern elder because they're as curious as they are wise. So what kind of programs do we have for people in midlife if they want to go press the reset button on their life? We don't have them. And so that's the bottom line.
It's cool.
There's a study out of Yale from a woman named Becca Levy that shows that if you actually help people move from a negative to neutral perspective on aging to a positive one, you actually add 7.5 good years to their life.
I believe that.
And that's more time added than if you actually have them stop smoking or you have them actually start working out. So it's like a public health benefit.
Listen, nobody's a bigger buyer of perspective is actual life.
Yeah.
You find what you're looking for.
It's all mindset.
I believe in that shit, bro.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really, really neat. Yeah. So what, you want to build like fucking Harvard?
No. What more than anything I'd like to do, I've been lucky enough to be on the board of the Burning Man Project for Burning Man for about 10 years, and I just stepped down. I'd like to do what they did or what the Esalen Institute did in Big Sur, which is be the first of its kind and then basically create the category. And so whether the category is transformational festivals with Burning Man or personal growth retreat centers with Esalen, we will create the category of midlife wisdom schools around
the
world.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I'm a buyer.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Come on down to Baja.
I will. I'm not against it. I talk a lot about people visiting retirement homes. I talk a lot about 50, 60, 70. I think people are just checking out when the game's still on.
Yeah.
It's because, especially if you're 55 right now, you grew up in a household where your grandparents were dying around that age.
Yeah.
You know, people don't understand how much advancement has happened.
Plus, you also had hierarchy. I mean, back in the old days, you sort of paid your dues and then you got to 55 and you said, I'll go out on the golf course and I won't have to work hard. And then the recession of 12 years ago, came along and you lost your job. Actually, I think 1/4 of the people in the US, age 50 and older, lost their job in the Great Recession. And they didn't find it again. They lost it and then they started working at Walmart. So there's a lot of people who fit this profile and there's a lot of wisdom, because one of the things that has been proven is that your emotional intelligence grows with age.
You have context, experience, fucking matters.
So that's that.
Very interesting.
It's great to see you.
Let me ask you a couple of things. You've said you had 750
alums now from 22 countries.
Give me an anecdotal story.
Let me tell you an anecdotal story that talks about the diverse, why we made a social enterprise. There was in our beta period, the first 6 months, we had a 45-year-old white male retired investment banker who was wealthy but didn't have purpose.
Right.
And we had a 62-year-old social worker, African-American social worker, female, lots of purpose, no money. We didn't set them up to actually learn from each other, but they went for a walk on the beach every single day because our campus, our 4-acre campus is right on the beach. And so what we've come to realize is that wisdom is not taught, it's shared. And what you do is you create a cohort of 18 to 20 people.
And are you guys, do you have enough demand that you guys can be thoughtful in the...
Yeah. No, very, very it's
popular. You know, I'm practical, right?
Like, we were on the cover of Southwest Airlines magazine January of last year. We were on the cover of the New York Times business section, Sunday
business
section.
Is this a for-profit business?
No, it's a social enterprise. I don't take a dime. And over 50% of our people were on scholarship in the first year. So, so could it be a for-profit business? Absolutely. Are there some big, global hospitality companies watching us right now? Yes, partly because
you're an entrepreneur. Do you have hopes for it to be?
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Which I think is awesome, by the way. You're not allowed to be into it.
No, I know, I know.
You know, but I mean,
this has every potential to be a for-profit business.
Do you personally want it to be? I mean that.
Yes, I would like to see for-profit and social and non-profit, both. Great. Why not both?
And more importantly, to your point, other people feeding off the hypothesis to do whatever they want with it.
Yeah, I think part of the reason these global hotel chains are looking at this is a couple things. Number one is they look at Chip and they say, okay, 33 years ago, one of the first boutique hoteliers. 7 years ago, joined Airbnb when everybody thought he was an idiot.
Yeah, no, listen. Homestrike.
What's his next thing? And his next thing seems to be this midlife wisdom school thing.
Right, and you have leverage of success, which is going to make them take it more seriously.
There's that, and then there's also...
Do you hate that ever?
No.
You know, I asked you a weird... Let me tell you why. I don't know you well enough to ask this, but I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I so enjoy being underdog and underestimated that right now I'm getting into a funny part where I have enough wins and consistent wins and I'm out there enough that now I feel like, uh-oh, when I come up with new crazy shit, too many people think it's gonna work. And, I'm having fodder with you.
I was curious
what you thought about that.
Well, let me tell you.
How much enjoyment did you get out of your world thinking it's crazy, you went to Airbnb and then being right?
Yeah.
How much do you, where are you now? Because I bet you the majority of people that know you in your space think this is now gonna be a success because 2 W's in a row gives you that clout.
There's no doubt about that, but you start talking to people about their age and they actually don't want to hear it. So there's an element, and I'm talking about the executives at these, Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt.
Interesting. You're poking a sensitive spot.
It's sort of like, okay. Yeah. And frankly, the CEOs of those companies who I know pretty well are not going to get all worked up because they've had their success.
That's right.
But it's that mid-level person who doesn't know if they're going to be able to have their job a year from now who sort of says, ooh, I don't know what a midlife wisdom school would be. So long story short is, I appreciate the fact that my pedigree has allowed me to get to a place where people do keep an eye on what I'm doing. But when you do something weird and create a midlife wisdom school, it sounds a little weird.
God, it feels so fucking right to me.
Yeah, I know.
It really does.
So it's necessary.
Now I understand why I got the email.
We're going to see 100 of these in the next 10 years.
Yeah, so I'm a buyer of that.
That's my job is to go out and be
the
Pied Piper.
I'm a huge buyer of that.
So
good for you.
Yeah.
Let me know how I can help, and we'll talk about me coming to Baja.
Thank you. Love it.
Where can everybody check it out if they want to do some homework, or what do they Google?
They could go to modernelderacademy.org.
Modernelderacademy.org.
Or com, either one. They're both. They can go to my website, chipconley.com, C-O-N-L-E-Y. And
the book is called?
Wisdom at Work, The Wisdom Making of a Modern Elder.
Chip, thanks for being on.
Yeah, Gary.
This was good,
to see
bro.
You.
I'm so glad you reached out because I think this is going to hit this audience. Guys, I hope you enjoyed that. Please give us some feedback on social so I can get the qualitative data on like the enjoyment or your thoughts on it. I think if you're following this, you A, know how much I give a shit about this, so it was smart of Chip or team to reach out to me because this is the right audience. And more importantly, I'm also wildly aware that an enormous amount of you are skew younger and have parents and loved ones that are probably not even fucking thinking about this, so make sure they listen to this podcast. I think if we impact one of your parents to get happy, that's an ROI positive event.